It was a very good year. It was a very good year for small town girls and soft summer nights. We'd hide from the light on the village green. When I was 17, it was a very good year. It was a very good year for city girls who lived up the stairs with all that perfumed hair. And it came undone when I was 21. It was a very good year. It was a very good year for blue-blooded girls of independent means. We'd ride in limousines. Their chauffeurs would drive. When I was 35,
that song. In fact, I sing that song quite a bit when I do my karaoke, but it's not a real popular song. I think it's more popular with us old farts. Okay, this is, what are we on here? Wait a minute. This is March the 2nd already. I almost missed a couple of days there. March the 2nd, 2016, and this is White Aryan Resistance, P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And if you look on our email that we send to you, we've got a Twitter program going, and we've got a Facebook program going, and we're just getting all over the place. I've been putting out quite a bit of information in the form of letters and emails to various newspapers around the country on my position on this fiasco we're going through. I'm not going to endorse anybody because I don't think any of them are what I want and what you want. But I am endorsing the chaos because chaos brings things to light. With chaos and argument and strife, the facts come out, usually. The facts are coming out all over the place. Well, one thing is the facts are coming out is the Republican Party is such a goddamn phony party. Now, don't say, hey, oh, you're defending the Democrat Party, because I'm not. But the Republican Party is the war party. And war is not good for the white race. It's never been good for the white race. It's gotten millions and millions and millions of white people killed. And it also gets millions and millions and millions of brown people killed over there in the Middle East because of the insanity of George Bush, Dick Cheney, and those people, who I hope someday they'll be taken to The Hague, to the World Court, and tried as the war criminals they are. The goddamnedest war criminal, and also at the same time, Clinton, Bill Clinton, should be tried, and our black boy president, he's involved in the war crimes. I mean, you can't do all this shit without being a war criminal. But they're saying this is it's all right when the United States Pentagon and the big banks and the money power in this country, they can do anything they want. Well, as racial separatists, we've got to get our program straight. For years, the racial program has been right-wing, Republican, conservative. Well, they're not conserving anything. They haven't conserved anything for a long, long time. And they're surely not conserving the white race. That southern strategy by the Republicans was just to corral the vote and then do whatever they wanted to. Yep, that's what happened. It's all fun and games. It's all follow the money. We need to be more like Aryan socialists. Yeah, and people don't like it, that's too bad. But I think people are going to have to like it one of these days down the line. Do you hear any of these candidates talking about how we're getting all these white people killed, these veterans, soldiers, and how the veterans are being poisoned with depleted uranium and all this ammunition and weapons and bombs got depleted uranium in it. We're poisoning the whole Middle East and poisoning all our veterans coming back. They're committing suicide because of depleted uranium. Some of them are going on mass killing spree, killing their whole family, and nobody wants to talk about it. It's all well known what this depleted uranium is doing, but nobody wants to talk about it. VA doesn't want to talk about it. It's just like Agent Orange was. They didn't want to talk about that either. They wait till most of the veterans that have it, we're almost all dead, then they say, oh yeah, there was Agent Orange over there. Oh, wally. And we spent all that money and all those troops killing a million Vietnamese for what? What was that all about? It was all about bullshit. You know, we got to stop those communists. Like I say, I wasted a lot of my life fighting the communist threat. And no communist ever bloodied my nose or took a shot at me or anything. I had a couple of them try to hit me over the head in riots in the street, but that's about as far as it went. The Cold War, I believe, was pretty much a fiasco. A very, very expensive fiasco. This is why we can't have anything to do with these damn Republicans and these right-wingers. And these Christ maniacs, because they support wars. Almost all the Christian fanatics support wars because they say, oh, we're doing it for God. God's on our side. We've got to do it for God, and to get the baby Jesus back, we have to have a world war. We have to have a nuclear war. We have to have a nuclear war in the Middle East before Jesus come back. And then if our darling Jews don't go along with Jesus, we'll kill them. We'll kill them. We'll kill them all off. Well, what the hell was wrong with Hitler? What was wrong with Hitler if you Christians are going to kill off all the Jews that don't bend their knee to Jesus? Spooks in the sky. It's all bullshit. You know, as far as these guys running for office, none of them are talking about the tremendous costs of the Pentagon and that Obama's talking about now. We got to build more atomic bombs. Now, what the fuck have we got? How do we need more atomic bombs? We don't need the bombs we got. Because the more we saber rattle with these atomic bombs, the more other people want to build atomic bombs too. You know, say, well, shit, we don't want you to have all the bombs. We want to protect ourselves from your bombs with our bombs. Yeah. And then the United States gives a lot of the secrets away. You know, that's where even the Russians got the secrets of the atomic bombs from Americans. Yep. Yeah, it's all the predatory capitalism and the banking system. Follow the money. And now everybody's crying about the heroin in the United States. Well, where do you think the heroin come from? It comes mostly from Afghanistan, with U.S. Army troops cultivating the damn stuff. It's we supporting the government that is producing all the heroin to send to Europe and the United States, and then we cry about heroin? We're the most hypocritical country in the world. Even the worst of the dictators in the Middle East weren't as hypocritical as the United States. As I say, I think Bernie Sanders is the only guy that said anything about anti-war stuff, even though I think he voted for going into Iraq. What was the war budget this year? $780 billion? And that's just scratching the surface. And then there's all the foreign aid that goes into these dictators they don't like. And they talk about regime change. Well, who set them up in the first place? You don't like the regime? How come you bankrolled them with foreign aid in the first place? No, our worst enemies are right here in the United States. They're right there on Wall Street. They're right there in Washington, D.C. They're in the Congress. They're in the Senate. That's where our enemies are, our big enemies. If we didn't have those enemies, I don't think we'd have that many enemies around the world. And I don't think that many white people would be dying for all this bullshit. But the white people have to blame themselves, really. I mean, they go for it. They buy it. They encourage it. They want to vote for all these guys that want war all the time. They vote for them. They think, oh, you're not patriotic if you're not for war. If you're not for building more bombs and having more thousands of troops all over the world, then you're not patriotic. Now, that is the sickest position that anybody could ever take. That is a very, very sick position, and it's going to come back to bite them in the ass. Unfortunately, we're going to get bit in the ass too, but at least we're going to know what's going on and we can prepare for something. And the reason I keep saying I love chaos is because that can lead to disintegration of power positions like the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. The more chaos, the more they lose control. And if there's anything we need most of all, it's for these power outfits and parties to lose control, get the control back to the states and to the people, even if you have to shoot to get it. It's too late for voting this stuff in or out. It's too late. Don't even kid yourself. This is going to end up in a civil war. Well, you can call it whatever you want, but for simplicity, I call it a civil war. You can't bring this many different ideologies and religions under one roof in one country and expect to have a stable country. It's never been in the history of man. It's not going to be now. The more the capitalists bring all these hordes of people in here for cheap labor or political party activity or whatever, the more frazzled it's going to be. It's going to be everybody for himself, every group for themselves. Then you're going to have blacks and whites fight together against other whites like us. You're going to have white Mexicans, Hispanics fighting dark Mexicans. You're going to have mulatto Negroes fighting dark black Negroes. And then you're going to have whites having to fight all of these people. It's going to be one of the damned... One, if it kicks off, and I really do believe sooner or later it will, it's going to be the damnedest bloodbath the world has ever seen. And you know who they'll come after first? This Pentagon and so forth? You white radicals. You white separatists. They think that if they clean you out, then everything will be okay. Well, it's not going to be okay because they're going to be overrun. The gates of the White House and so forth will be overrun by the masses of non-white groups. So anyhow, let's see what's in the news here. I just got a call from the New York, I believe it was the Daily News. They printed my letter to them in the paper today. I've never had a letter printed in one of those big papers back east. But they're quite interested in the fact that I'm not supporting Donald Trump. As a white separatist, I can't support the guy. He's not a white separatist. He's a billionaire, and he's made a lot of his money on all kinds of illegal activity and so forth. He's all for big warfare and more weapons and more troops moving around the world, interfering with everybody else's life. I can't vote for him. I couldn't support somebody like that. I know David Duke can, because it's partly because David Duke just wants to be an ambulance chaser and get his name in the paper. And if David Duke was to gain more power, he would be at the top of the capitalist Republican list. That's the kind of guy. He likes the money. He really would like to have the power and the money, and he'd do anything to get it. But unfortunately for David, he made the mistake of declaring for the Klan way back when he was a kid, or the Nazi Party, and he can never shake it. He can never shake it. So trying to go after it, power and prestige, the normal way these phony politicians do, is closed to him. And he doesn't realize it. Well, I don't know what he realizes. Got to remember, he's got these books he's got out. I think all of them were ghostwritten by probably some Jew. But anyhow, that's beside the point. I don't need to mess around in David Duke's playground. He's got his own playground. I got my playground. My playground is Aryan socialism, anti-predatory capitalism, anti-war, pro-environmentalists. People who destroy the environment should be lined up like the Chinese do and shot. Predatory bankers who rob the people should be lined up against the wall and shot. I mean, literally, literally. That's the only way you'll ever get their attention. You can't even get their attention by throwing them in prison. if they ever would throw them in prison. They're not going to throw these guys in prison. They have to be taught the hard lesson of the French Revolution. Yeah, that type, that's how they got to be taught. And we got a ways to go to see that. But it's going to happen. You know, I think I'm the only free man, really, in the country. I don't give a shit. I say exactly what I want to say. I insult whoever I want to insult. I badmouth whoever I want to insult. And I say nice things about people I want to say about. Like I said about Bernie Sanders. A lot of his positions are good positions. And I know he's a Jew, but he's... That Jew's never done anything bad to me, and I don't think he's done anything really bad to anybody else in this country. It's one of those things. One of those things. But you see, he's not going very far, and he's a Jew. You'd think, oh my God, he'd really be going. But they don't care. They don't care if you're a Jew or an Aryan or what. They're going to maintain the power, and that's it. And you will have no power unless we give it to you. One of our associates, Lone Wolves out there, sent me an article here, a short article. It's entitled, If a Sane Person Took Over Trump's Body. I'm going to read it to you. I don't know why I didn't read it, so if there's something in there you don't like, well, that's too bad. I'm sorry. Body snatchers, body switchers. For the moment, for the purposes of the argument, let's say Donald Trump is a crazy son of a bitch. He doesn't mean what he says. He doesn't remember many things he says. He won't really try to enact his promises if he's next president. Or if you hate what he stands for, he will try to make those promises stick. Now, let's imagine a sane person could take over Trump's body. Boom. A person who actually means what he says and who's prepared to give it his all, who cares about his people, and so on. Would that person keep any of Trump's current rhetoric? Would he retain any of Trump's message? In other words, if we could separate Trump, the man, from what he's been saying, does any of this make sense? Does any of it, in fact, challenge the men who've really been running the country for a long time? Does any of it make them turn red, choke, spit, and fall down in the street? Well, here's a short few quotes from the recent Weekly Standard editorial, Selling America Short, by Max Boot and Ben Steele. Both authors are senior fellows at the Council on Foreign Relations. Uh-oh. Steele is the CFR's Director of International Economics, part of the ruling class, of course. The CFR is U.S. home of Globalism Incorporated. No, the Weekly Standard authors aren't choking and spitting in public. They're keeping their cool, but they aren't happy. Quote, start with trade policy, the area that along with immigration seems to exercise him, Trump, the most. One of America's greatest accomplishments in the early post-war era was the creation of a rules-based international trade regime. Government stuck by this trade regime, even through the recent financial crisis and recession. Trump, however, says he is prepared to abrogate America's commitments, citing nothing more than the pretense that our importing more than we're exporting is evidence of cheating by foreign governments. And they do. As for the recently concluded 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, not yet ratified by Congress, Trump condemned it, and he should have. Tom Metzger agrees. Yes, indeed, these trade treaties, GATT, NAFTA, remember that? Bill Clinton, that destroyed the economy of agriculture in Mexico and put all kinds of people out of work in the United States. Then there's CAFTA, the TPP, and so on. are the cornerstones of the globalist cathedral. NAFTA, for example, allowed the massive export of cheap U.S. corn to Mexico, put 1.5 million Mexican corn farmers into bankruptcy, and led some of those farmers to come across the border in immigration wave. Yeah, economics is what causes invasions by foreign people, and warfare causes it in the Middle East. I mean, you know, you blow the shit out of everybody's country, and then they say, come on, Ma, we got to get the fuck out of here. And so then we cry about them coming in. So what are you going to do? When I was running for Congress, I was pointing all this out back in 1980. I said, you know, the Republicans talk about it, you know, and Pat Buchanan yells about this terrible invasion from Mexico, but yet it's his party, the Republican Party, who's laying the borders open for them. They want them for the cheap labor. And the Democrats wanted them to build a power political base, being so stupid about race that they are. The mainstream press doesn't pound on that story. The trade treaties have allowed U.S. manufacturers to shut down their factories here, throwing huge numbers of Americans out of work, including workers in the inner cities, and set up those factories in countries where the going wage is 3 cents a day. Well, guess who started that? Remember Richard Nixon? I remember as clear as day when he went to China, and he set up treaties with China for trade. And the first company, I think, big company that went over there was Willys Jeep. They fell on their ass and had to come back. But they did. The National Chamber of Commerce promoted and promoted and promoted factories leaving the country. And this was mostly Republicans. Mostly Republicans, even though a lot of times the Democrats go along with it. Then the products made abroad came back to the U.S. as exports without any tariffs. Well, this country started using tariffs to finance itself. That's the only taxes we had in the old days, and it worked well, tariffs. That's how corporate scams work. That's the only way it can work. And the cheap exports drive U.S. competitors who were hanging on by their teeth into failure. Perfect. Who could possibly oppose this marvelous operation and call it red, white, and blue and patriotic to do? I mean, this is how sick these sons of bitches are. Trump. But he's crazy. He doesn't mean what he says. He's a maniac. Fine. Who of estimable character will pick up this sword? Rand Paul? Gone. His father, Ron? Gone. Ralph Nader, barely present. Who will run for president and assert in no uncertain terms that he'll smash those trade treaties to bits come hell or high water, regardless of prior agreements? Bernie Sanders? Yes, he opposes the trade deals, but does he have what it takes to A, win the nomination, A, B, win the presidency, and C, go to the wall? Unilaterally declaring the trade treaties null and void, creating a planetary uproar and bringing the whole house down. No, he's just running as a shill for the Clintons, the Clinton dynasty. No matter how honest you think he is, he's running as a shill for the Clintons. Because that's what it will take. No Congress is going to pass a law retracting the treaties. No government agency is going to rise up on its hind legs and revolt. No Supreme Court is going to cancel a treaty. The U.S. economy could fail completely and fall into abject ruin, and still no government entity would budge. You want to know why we're moving slowly but surely towards a revolution or a civil war? That's easy to see. Bernie Sanders would never go away out on a limb and unilaterally declare trade treaties null and void either. these pundits and fellows and directors who occupy little thrones at globalist press outlets and think tanks and foundations and nonprofits suddenly let a flood of analysts from overseas arrive as experts, as products, without tariffs, snatching their jobs for far less money and putting them on the street. Then let's find out how these newly unemployed globalist experts feel about free trade. Let's hear them scream about America first. Let's see them foam at the mouth. Let's watch these intellectual goons hit the crazy panic button and develop new theories about what America needs when their self-interest is actually threatened for the first time, when they're in the same position as U.S. factory workers, when they can feel the heat and the breath of disaster snuggling up against them at night. Some people believe Trump is a Mussolini. Well, there's a lot of Mussolinis running around defending globalism as it purposely cut the knees from the millions of U.S. jobs, thus creating an economically decimated country and a decimated planet. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I have a book on my shelf from the 1920s when Mussolini was just beginning his rise to power. And every liberal in the United States was supporting Mussolini. He's a wonderful guy. I think it's called Politics of Italy from 1890 to 1930 or something. But he was supported big time by all the big time liberals and a lot of conservatives. So if you don't like what you get, don't be screwed up in the beginning. An economically decimated planet is easier to command from above, which is the globalist wet dream. Yeah, they want to turn us all into a bunch of peasants. Then with a few bombers and weapons and door-to-door searches, you don't have a chance. Well, that's the way it goes when you're on the road to revolution and civil war. Continuing, there is a crazy loose-talking cowboy running for president who seems to understand at least part of this plan and says he'll torpedo it no matter what. He now has a straight shot at winning the nomination. He'd be running against a candidate who in her wildest dreams would never think of backing off one inch from Globalism Incorporated. If she isn't lying through her teeth every day, she isn't happy. And that shrill voice of her trying to mimic a dictator speaking, a South American dictator, is so shrill, it's terrible. If every morning there isn't another foreign country to destabilize and drive into failed nation status, she's not happy. As president, as last ensconced in the Oval Office, with the power, she would cackle with mad glee and take out her long list of old enemies against whom she intends to wreak final revenge. If Trump is a Mussolini, what is she? If you believe Trump is an unhinged lunatic, then there are two lunatics running against each other for the presidency of the United States. That was written by a fellow by the name of John Rappaport. It's a good article, and I basically agree with it, and thank my buddy Lewis for sending it to me.
I think it's true that Afghanistan produces a lot of opium, but when you talk about heroin, the international community forgets the fact that in order to turn opium to heroin, you require chemical precursors that come from huge pharmaceutical companies from Europe and Far East and other countries. So they never talk about that. There's enough money made in bringing precursors to this country to turn our poppies into heroin. And if you don't attack that angle of this problem, just producing opium for a farmer who wants to buy a plastic pair of shoes for his son once a year is not going to solve the problem in this country. For example, 9,000 tons of opium last year in Afghanistan required 13,000 pounds of chemicals, tons of chemical precursors that came from major pharmaceutical producers in the world. Afghans are producing it to survive. And I'm not condoning it. We should stop producing it, but also the consumption should stop, and also the import of precursors should also be stemmed, in my opinion. Money laundering and banks and all those issues should be dealt with seriously.
Do you get that? They can't grow this stuff without massive amounts of pharmaceutical chemicals coming from the United States and Europe and places like that into Afghanistan. You got it? You're right back to the same old thing. Criminals in the business world, criminal capitalists, predatory capitalists. Almost everything bad happening someplace else begins in this country. So who's your enemy? You know, like they say, who's your daddy? Who's your enemy? Your enemy is here. We need to root them out here and root them out in the most ruthless way as far as I'm concerned. Well, Louis Farrakhan of the Black Muslims spoke out recently about the Trump situation. On Monday, Louis Farrakhan, the notoriously anti-Jew African-American leader of the Nation of Islam, who once said, quote, that many Jews received a text message not to come to work on September 11th, unquote, praised the Republican front runner for not taking money from the Jews during his sermon at the annual Savior's Day at NOI's Mosque Merriam in Chicago. How about that? Well, a lot of times Louis Farrakhan will say something I agree with totally, but I don't trust Louis Farrakhan. I've known about him for a long time. Back in the old days, I was a guest of his organization in Los Angeles. But I think ever since Louis Farrakhan, back in the 80s, made his trip to Libya and other countries in the Middle East, and he came back, and before he even come back, the CIA was threatening him. The government was threatening him. I think he made a deal. That's my opinion. I think he's probably working with the CIA and so forth. I can't prove it, but I know what happened because I was involved with things back then in Africa for different reasons. And he was all set. And of course, he'd received money from Gaddafi, too. And so the powers that be in Washington were very upset with him. And they were threatening that they might arrest him when he got back to the United States. And then all of a sudden, he sort of started moderating his views a little bit. And since then, he says something once in a while to keep the rank and file excited. But he don't have that fire and spark he used to have. And I think that there's a good reason for that. And the longer I look at the case of what happened to Malcolm X, I'm more convinced than ever that it was Farrakhan's troops that put down Malcolm X. Well, well, I see four white men were convicted for beating and running down a black auto worker in the brutal 2011 Mississippi hate crime killing, were ordered to pay $840,000 to the victim's heirs. Now that means about as much to a white working man as they could have said $40 million. It was like when they got me civilly in Portland, Oregon. They said I had to pay the Negro, what was it, $6 million or $7 million. that was a joke. That was a joke. So they do this just for the public. They actually think that some of these guys are going to pay them. They're going to have that kind of money. U.S. District Judge Carlton Reeves Monday ordered the men Daryl Paul, Deadman 23, John Aaron Race, Rice, 23, and Dylan Wade Butler, 24, and William Kirk Montgomery, 26, to make restitution to the beneficiaries of the James Craig Anderson. Well, I don't like to see this kind of stuff because I hate to see any white guys go to prison or fined hundreds of thousands of dollars for something that didn't need to be. Indiscriminate killing of a person of another race just on the spur of the moment is madness, and usually spurred on by booze. Now, if you told me that we've got a ship out here and we're going to load it with 1,000 Negroes and send it back to Africa, I'd say, fine, let's do it. That kind of thing. That's what I support. But going out and looking for trouble and jumping on one lone black guy in the middle of the street and doing whatever you had to do or whatever you did is suicidal. It's stupid. Or even just a punch in the nose should suffice. You don't need to kill a guy or drag him down the street behind a pickup truck. I see these people, these Muslims who were killed right close to me, 50 miles away. In fact, I was in Fort Wayne yesterday. They say the cops come out and say it's not a hate crime. Well, why did they even say anything about a hate crime in the beginning? Just because four Muslims were killed, they automatically want to jump to an idea that's a hate crime. And then when it's not a hate crime, they come out and say, it's not a hate crime. And what sticks in your mind? It reminds me of my legal advisor told me, he said, in court, you know, they always say when somebody says something on the stand, well, disregard that. Disregard that. He used to tell me, he said, you know, that's like saying, Jell-O, now try to get it out of your mind. No, once they put the hate crime in, it's like with drugs. Psychologically and hypnotically or whatever you're going to say it, don't take drugs, don't doesn't compute. Remember when Mrs. Reagan was yelling about don't take drugs? Well, psychologically they don't hear don't. Don't doesn't compute. So you hear take drugs. So disregard Jell-O. And what's in your mind from then on all day? You can't get Jell-O out of your mind. That's the way this propaganda works. Just keep saying hate crime, hate crime, hate crime. Even when there's no hate crime. It seems like taking a long time to figure out a simple murder case of four people in a relatively small town. It's almost like they're trying to figure out some way to make it a hate crime. So if there were a half a dozen guys involved in killing four guys, if one of those half a dozen happened not to be a Muslim, oh, see, it's a hate crime. Well, I see my short letter that was sort of edited is in the New York Daily News letters column, the first one. How about that? Yeah, man, we're hitting the big time now.
Racist ideals and opposition came to a head in Anaheim Saturday afternoon. A Ku Klux Klan rally erupted in violence. A group of KKK members announced they would be holding a rally at Anaheim's Pearson Park. A larger group of anti-Klan counter-protesters showed up first. When the KKK arrived, tempers flared.
Yeah, don't hurt him, sir! Sir, don't hurt him! Don't hurt him!
I love you!
After a little time, angry words shouted between the hate group and its protesters weren't enough. A bloody fight broke out.
When the KKK members arrived in a vehicle, maybe five of them in one vehicle, that a group of the counter-protesters immediately attacked them as they exited the vehicle. That resulted in a stabbing right off to the left here by the fire hydrant.
The stabbing victim, a protester, was stuck by either the pointed end of a flagpole from a Confederate flag or American flag. You can see here a KKK member trying to defend himself with the American flag while a Confederate one lays on the ground below. It's not clear who attacked first, but several videos showed protesters punching and rushing the KKK.
That ultimately led to a melee in the street that stretched almost a whole city block down Cypress Street, where a number of other fights broke out.
We came here for peaceful protest of White Lives Matter, and we get jumped by...
I think you had to expect something.
It's crazy for them to even come over here where there's a majority of minorities here.
It's important to remember that this is the Klan's message, as reprehensible as many of us may feel it is. It's protected by the First Amendment, and we can't be getting in the middle of stopping them from doing that.
To me, it's just old. It's like we're at a different time in the world, you know, that we got to be moving forward, and this is not helping, you know.
I hope you realize that Cruz would have never made it in Texas if it hadn't been for the voting bloc of Christ Insanity people and the fundamentalist Christians. He didn't have any other voting bloc like some of the liberals do and so forth. That's the only people that put this clown in, and he is a clown, but not very funny. He is a bad motor scooter. Even his contemporaries in this Congress know that, or Senate. As far as I'm concerned, block voting by any religious group is against the best will of the nation, absolutely, because most of their information is based upon spooks in the sky and false information. And so when they try to run the government using that kind of nonsense, it's totally counterproductive for the nation. Well, I see Germany's top court weighs a ban on neo-Nazi fringe NPD party. That's the right-wing party. Well, I want to tell you something. You'll never get anywhere playing the party bit. You're going to have to use other methods, baby. You're never going to get any place over there in Germany by using the method of the NPD. The NPD is so full of informants and so full of traitors, it's unbelievable. And the right wing like it because they once a year or so they can go to these big rallies and big conferences and big conventions and try to bullshit everybody, and they go nowhere. American right wing leaders love that NPD party. Even Pierce used to go over there and be their guest. How come Pierce could be a guest of the NPD when most of the rest of us can't even get into Germany? He didn't have any problem getting into Germany. Even Rockwell had to sneak in to England through Ireland. But there's some American right-wingers and even racists who seem to have no problem getting into these countries in Europe. It's a landmark hearing that has kicked off in Germany's top court as part of efforts to ban a far-right neo-Nazi political party more than a decade after the first attempt failed. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you ban my free speech, my freedom of assembly, my freedom to have a meeting, and we go to war. You know, lone wolf, baby. Germany's upper house of parliament have taken the case against the National Democratic Party to the Constitutional Court, the ruling class court. Probably still got some old Nazis on there from the old days that were able to escape punishment, but now they're sitting in power, power against the new wave of young people who want change. Arguing the anti-immigrant group, they're not immigrants, they're goddamn illegal aliens, are a threat to the country's democratic order. Well, then the democratic order should go, and are at odds with Germany's constitution. Well, then Germany's constitution should go. I mean, as simple as that. While there has been popular support in the mainstream, whatever that is, and from Germany's political establishment, follow the money, to ban the NDP, others fear the attention given to the group will merely result in an increase in support as anti-refugee sentiment rises in some parts of the country. Well, I hope they suppress the party, because that will lead to violence in the streets. If you can't get free speech, freedom of assembly one way, freedom of speech, then you get it the other way. So if you don't want violence and demonstrations and killing in the street, don't ban the party. And they'll just continue to eat meat and retreat like they always do. Constitutional Court Chief Justice Andreas Vasculi opened a hearing on Tuesday by saying that there are many obstacles involved with banning a political party. That's right, free speech. Noting that it had been 60 years since a political group was stripped of its right to operate in Germany. Well, they never should have been stripped of the right anyhow. He said any decision to ban a party is a sharp and double-edged sword that must be used with great caution, noting that it limits freedom in order to preserve freedom. Well, if the other side gets in power, they just come back and use the same sword to cut off your rights, you democratic people. In order for the party to be banned, 6 out of 8 judges need to agree on a prohibition, while the hearing is expected to last 3 days. Opponents of the group must prove that the NPD is unconstitutional, given its neo-Nazi views, is a threat to the country's democratic order, whatever the fuck that means. That means capitalist order is what it means, and exhibits an aggressive and combative attitude. Well, of course, any party worth a damn is going to exhibit aggressive and combative attitude. We're not a sewing circle. The upper house is also hoping to prove the group who have organized anti-illegal alien demonstrations and have been accused of intimidating opposition political figures is guilty of creating a climate of fear. That's exactly what the other side does. That's exactly what the other side does in Germany, and shares essential characteristics with the Nazis. Well, they're either Nazis or they're not Nazis. Either they have a Nazi party or they don't have a Nazi party. You can't have it both ways. I guess Merkel sounds more like the Nazi party than anybody. The party, which was founded in 1964 from supporters of the neo-fascist German Reich Party, recorded just 1.3% of the national vote in Germany's 2013 election and have never scored above 5% threshold requiring to enter national party. Of course, they're scared to death. There's massive persecution against people like that who distribute or think about National Socialism. They're scared to death. They take your job, they take your kids away from you. However, the NDP is represented in the State Assembly in Mecklenburg, Western Pomerania in Germany's east, with critics arguing that the extra attention given to the group will help to boost its support and membership, which currently stands at about 5,200. Well, that's true. The only problem is these so-called parties that supposedly are working for our white interests don't get anywhere. You have to have power. You got to have power, and power, like Mao Zedong says, comes out of a muzzle of a gun. If no other way. If you can go out in the streets and demonstrate and win elections, fine. But you're not going to as long as your enemies control absolutely the whole ball of wax of apparatus. You don't have a chance. They'll let you continue sometimes as a small little party meeting in little beer halls, but that's not power. That's not how anybody gets power. Wake up, Germany. I should keep my mouth shut because we need to wake up the United States. We're just as fucked up as they are.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're privileged to have with us a man known around the world as the Prince of Peace, Jesus Christ. How are you, Jesus?
Fine, thanks, and let me say it's great to be back.
Why, after all this time, have you come back?
Mostly nostalgia.
Could you tell us a little about the first time you were here?
Well, there's not much to tell. I think everybody knows the story by now. I was born on Christmas, and actually that always bothered me, because I only got one present. You know, if I was born a couple of months earlier, I would have got two presents. But look, I'm not complaining. After all, it's only material goods.
There's a story that there were three wise men.
Well, there were three kings who showed up. I don't know how wise they were. They didn't look very wise. They said they followed a star. That don't sound wise to me.
Didn't they bring gifts?
Yeah, that's right. Gold, frankincense, and I believe myrrh, which I never did find out what that was. You don't happen to know what myrrh is, do you?
Well, I believe it's a reddish-brown bitter gum resin.
Oh, great. Just what I need. What am I going to do with a gum resin? I'd rather have the money. That way I could buy something I need. You know, something I wouldn't normally buy for myself.
Well, what would that be?
I don't know. A bathing suit? I never had a bathing suit. Maybe a Devo hat? Possibly a bicycle. I really could have used a bicycle. Do you realize all the walking I did? I must have crossed Canaan 6 or 8 times, up and down, north and south, walking and talking, doing miracles, telling stories.
Tell us about the miracles, Jesus. How many miracles did you perform?
Well, leaving out the loaves and the fishes, I would say a total of 107 miracles.
Well, why not the loaves and fishes?
Well, technically, that one wasn't a miracle.
It wasn't?
No. Turns out a lot of people were putting them back. They were several days old. And besides, not all those miracles were pure miracles anyway.
Well, what do you mean? If they weren't miracles, what were they?
Well, some of them were parlor tricks, optical illusions, mass hypnosis. Sometimes people were just hallucinating. I even used acupressure. That's how I cured most of the blind people, acupressure.
So not all of the New Testament is true?
Nah, some of the gospel stuff never happened at all. It was just made up. Luke and Mark used a lot of drugs. Luke was a physician and he had access to drugs. Matthew and John were okay, but Luke and Mark would write anything.
But what about raising Lazarus from the dead?
First of all, he wasn't dead, okay? He was hungover. I've told people that.
But in the Bible, you said he was dead.
No, I said he looked dead. I says, geez, Peter, this guy looks dead. You see, Lazarus was a very heavy sleeper. Plus, the day before, we had been to a wedding feast, and he had put away a lot of wine.
Oh, was that the wedding feast at Cana, where you changed the water into wine?
I don't know. We went to an awful lot of wedding feasts in those days.
But did you ever really turn water into wine?
Not that I know of. One time I turned apple juice into milk, but I don't recall the water and wine.
All right, speaking of water, let me ask you about another miracle. What about walking on water? Did that really happen?
Oh, yeah, that was one that really happened. You see, the problem was I could do it and the other guys couldn't. They were jealous. Peter got so mad at me, he had these special shoes made, special big shoes that if you started out walking real fast, you could stay on top of the water for a while. Then, of course, after a few yards, bada, boom, down he goes right into the water. He sinks like a rock. That's why I called him Peter. Thou art Peter, and upon this rock I shall build my church.
Well, that brings up the apostles. What can you tell us about the apostles?
They smelled like bait. But there were a good bunch of guys, 13 of them we had.
13? The Bible says there were only 12.
Well, that was according to Luke. I told you about Luke. Actually, we had 13. We had Peter, James, John, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, that's a different James, Thaddeus. How many is that now?
That's 10.
Okay, Simon, Judas, and Red.
Red?
Yeah, Red the Apostle.
Red the Apostle doesn't appear in the Bible.
Nah, Red kept pretty much to himself. He never came to any of the wedding feasts. He was a little strange. He thought the Red Sea was named after him.
And what about Judas?
Don't get me started on Judas, a completely unpleasant person, okay?
Well, what about the other apostles? Say, for instance, Thomas. Was he really a doubter?
Believe me, this guy Thomas, you couldn't tell him nothing. He's always asking me for ID. Soon as I would see him, he would go, "You got any ID?" To this day, he doesn't believe I'm God.
And are you God?
Well, partly. I'm a member of the Trinity.
Yes, in fact, you're writing a book about the Trinity.
That's right. It's called Three's a Crowd.
As I understand it, it's nothing more than a thinly veiled attack on the Holy Ghost.
Listen, it's not an attack, okay? It happens I don't get along with the Holy Ghost, so I leave him alone. That's it. What he does is his business.
Well, what's the reason?
Well, first of all, he's a wise guy. Every time he shows up, he's something different. One day he's a dove, another day he's a tongue of fire, always fooling around. I don't bother with the guy, I don't want to know about him, I don't want to see him, I don't want to talk to him.
Well, then let me change the subject. Is there really a place called hell?
Oh, yeah, there's a hell, all right. There's also a heck. It's not as severe as hell, but we've got a heck and a hell.
What about purgatory?
No, I don't know about no purgatory. We got heaven, hell, heck, and limbo.
Well, what is limbo like?
I don't know. No one's allowed in there. If anybody was in there, it wouldn't be limbo. It would just be another place.
Oh, I see. Well, getting back to your previous visit, what can you tell us about the Last Supper?
Well, first of all, if I'd have known I was going to be crucified, I would have had a bigger meal. You never want to be crucified on an empty stomach. As it was, I had a little salad and some veal.
The crucifixion must have been terrible.
Ah, yeah, it was awful. Unless you went through it yourself, you could never really know how painful it was. And tiring. It was very, very tiring. But I think more than anything else, it was embarrassing. You know, in front of all those people, to be crucified like that. But I guess it redeemed a lot of people. I hope so. It would be a shame to do it for no reason.
Were you scared?
Oh, yeah. I was afraid it was going to rain. I thought for sure I would get hit by lightning. One good thing, though, while I was up there, I had a really great view. I could actually see my house. There's always a bright side.
And then 3 days later, you rose from the dead?
Huh?
On Easter Sunday, you rose from the dead, didn't you?
Not that I know of. I think I would remember something like that. I do remember sleeping a long time after the crucifixion. Like I said, it was very tiring. I think what might have happened was I passed out and they thought I was dead. We didn't have such good medical people in those days. You know, it was mostly volunteers.
And according to the Bible, 40 days later you ascended into heaven.
Pulleys. Ropes, pulleys, and a harness. I think it was Simon who came up with this great harness thing that went under my toga. You couldn't see it at all. Since that day, I've been in heaven, and all in all, I would have to say that while I was down here, I had a really good time, except for the suffering.
And what do you think about Christianity today?
Well, I'm a little embarrassed by it, you know. Jeez, I wish they would take my name off of it. If I had the whole thing to do over, I would probably start one of those Eastern religions like Buddha. Buddha was smart. That's how come he's laughing.
So you wouldn't want to be a Christian?
Nah, I wouldn't want to be a member of any group whose symbol is a man nailed onto some wood. Especially if it's me. Buddha's laughing. Meanwhile, I'm on the cross.
I have a few more questions. Do you mind?
Hey, be my guest. How often do I get here?
Are there really angels?
Well, not as many as we used to have. Years ago, we had millions of them. Today, you can't get the young people to join. It got too dangerous with all the radar and the heat-seeking missiles.
Well, what about guardian angels? Are there such things?
Yes, we still have guardian angels, but now, with the population explosion, it's one angel for every six people. Years ago, everybody had his own angel.
But changing the subject, do you really answer prayers?
No. First of all, what with the sunspots and radio interference, a lot of prayers don't even get through. And between you and me, we just don't have the staff to handle the workload anymore. In the old days, we took pride in answering every single prayer. But like I said, there were less people then. And in those days, people prayed for something simple, to light a fire, to catch a yak, something like that. But today, you got people praying for hockey teams, for longer fingernails, to lose weight. We just can't keep up. Well, I think we're about out of time. I certainly want to thank you for visiting with us. Hey, no sweat. Do you have any words of advice? You mean like how to remove chewing gum from a suede garment, something like that? No, I mean spiritual advice. Well, I don't know how spiritual it is, but I'd say one thing is, don't give your money to the church. They should be giving their money to you. Well, thank you, Jesus, and good night. Well, good night. Thanks for having me on here today. And by the way, in case anyone is interested, Bell Bottoms will be coming back in the year 2015. Ciao!